Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Bullet Club for life.
Mate, honestly, I'm fucking soaked. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever and whenever you may be listening. This is Chain Wrestling with Mags and Sai. As always, I am Sai, and with me again, as always, is the cleaner to my rainmaker. He is the Bullet Club to my chaos. He is the podfather himself, Mr. Mags. How are we doing this week, sir?
All the better for that amazing introduction. To be compared to the cleaner is an absolute honour. How are you? How are you doing?
Well, okay. Have you got a minute, Max? I'm going to tell you some tales now. I'm going to tell you some. The last 20 minutes, and then yesterday morning, potentially two of the worst experiences I've had in a long time for just making myself angry by being a prat.
Okay. Do tell.
Okay, I'll start.
I love other people's misfortune. It really takes away from man.
Mate, honestly, I'll tell you now about my Sunday morning. As we're recording this, obviously it is Monday. So I'll tell you now about my Sunday morning. And honestly, if it didn't happen to me and somebody else was telling this tale, I wouldn't believe it was true. But this is legit the truth. I mean, my wife will verify everything on Twitter if you want to ask her. She'll probably take great pleasure in laughing along with people. At the moment, I currently work Sundays at this warehouse I'm currently working at through an agency, temporarily and so on. Being a Sunday, obviously Saturday night, yeah, I like to have a few beers, you know, as a lot of people do, I guess. But in theory, it's a school night, isn't it? I should be being sensible because I've got a very early start on a Sunday. I don't drive. I got to bus it over to where I work. I start at 8 a.m. and in Gloucester, the buses aren't very good pre 8 a.m. So I literally catch the first bus possible from wherever it runs to get remotely close to where I work. So I'm getting up relatively early. So I woke up Sunday morning a little bit bleary eyed, shall we say, a little bit not fully with it. I was a bit achy and a bit. I don't know if I'd slept funny or if it was just the after effects of a few baby shams the night before, shall we say.
Baby shams, wow. That's not really a throwback.
Exactly. You know, I get up and all I can taste is whatever ghastly concoction I'd made myself the night before to eat before I went to bed. You know, the sort of standard jalapeno peppers and whatever nasty taste left in my gob from whatever I threw in the toasty maker. So I jumped in the shower. I'm already running a bit late. I jumped in the shower, starts giving myself a scrub down to make sure I don't stink of booze or dirty, manky, drunk food when I go into my place of work. And I pulled a muscle in my neck whilst washing my hair.
Wow.
I know. That makes me sound like I'm about 100 years old, doesn't it? Or just a complete moron, or maybe both. But
I hope it's from the swoosh back where you all the water's coming off, like the photogenic kind of like frame of your hair going back, and then you going at me neck.
Oh, like the old Timotei adverts where you're flinging it back. Yeah. I wish it was, mate. I wish it was. The problem is that particular day, that Sunday morning after the previous evening's exploits, I guess, if I'd flung my head back like that, I probably would have just fallen over. You know, so Yeah, I put this battle in my neck and sort of across my shoulder area and all that. And it basically got to a stage where even now I can't turn. I don't know the name of the fella. It was a Ben Stiller film, and he was a model on the catwalk, and he couldn't turn right or couldn't turn left. That's how I feel right now.
Oh, Zoolander.
Zoolander, that's it. I can't turn left because my head is like, my neck is like rigid to the rest of my body where I pulled this muscle in my neck. So I thought, I've got to get to work. So I'm getting out, and it must be I don't know, 6:15, something like that. It's freezing bloody cold. Of course, the house is pitch black. I'm going down the stairs, kind of sideways, where I'm sort of, I leave all my clothes and everything downstairs, because I don't want to be moving around in the bedroom and wake the wife up that early. So I'm going down the stairs, kind of sideways, to get to my clothes. So, you know, I'm a big, fat, burly, hairy man, big beard, long hair, wrecked neck. Absolutely bollock naked, tripped over my stupid bastard cat Lemmy, fell down, and ended up effectively naked arse in the air, busted neck on the floor in the hallway.
Wow.
Yelling in pain. And what was amazing was, I suppose amazing to other people, to me it's more of a concern. I'm not a small fella. I mean, I'm quite overweight. I'm quite a tall guy as well. I fell down the stairs and I yelled. So I've made quite a bit of noise. Not one single bugger in my household got up to see if I was okay.
No one gives a shit.
Yeah. So I struggled on. I got myself sorted out. I sort of dressed myself with one arm because I was in pain, still thinking I need to go out and earn my minimum wage of £8, whatever it is, an hour, because, you know, I'm a responsible adult, man, because I've got bills to pay. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah.
So I'm sorting all this out. The last time I worked on a Sunday, I caught the bus and stayed on too long. Ended up going past my bus stop. It's not the normal bus I catch, you see, because it's a different one I have to get on a Sunday. I missed my bus stop and ended up with a 15-minute walk back to get to work and was late. So I'm really cautious now. I'm looking through the windows, trying to figure out where I'm going and so on, because it's a part of Gloucester that I don't go to other than to go to work. And this is coming in the back way, so I've got no idea where I am. And it's dark as well still. It's early morning. I'm looking around trying to think, okay, don't get off the bus late. I see a roundabout and I think, no, I know I've got to get off at a roundabout. So I press the bell, jump off, look around, and I'm thinking, I don't know where I am. So I got my phone out and did the old Google Maps jobby, the old route planner, what's it? Rather than get off the bus late, I've got off the bus with my crippled neck and soaking wet hair and in lots of pain, 2 stops too early. So now, rather than a 15-minute walk back that I had the previous week, I've now got a 25-minute walk forward to get to work. So I've walked in late anyway. And then to top it all off, I sit down. I get a bit of a roasting off the two bosses for being late, as rightfully I should. And, you know, it's not very professional. To top it all off, my break comes at 11 o'clock. I sit down. I've not even picked my bloody sandwiches up out of the fridge, have I? So I've got...
Oh, wow.
I've got wrecked neck. I've got hurt knees. I'm aching from falling down the stairs. I'm soaking wet hair, freezing bloody cold. I've got a hangover, and I haven't even got my bloody sandwiches to eat or nothing, mate. So yesterday morning was an absolute sodding disaster for me, and I was fuming all day.
Yeah, that was just like a comedy of errors, just on top of each other.
Absolute car wreck, man. And to top it off,
I would have bagged that day right off.
Yeah, the thing is, I walk home and say, yeah, I've had a bad day, I walked in, my name would be dirt. It ain't worth it, mate. Do you know what I mean? It's and top it all off, I mean, today's been great. Monday's my day off. I've watched this fantastic wrestling match we're about to discuss in a moment or two. Everything's been great. I've totally forgotten about the awfulness of yesterday morning. I've made all my notes watching the match back this afternoon. And then I go to get my drink, as I always do for when we're recording. I like to have a drink ready, as I suppose most people do when they're recording. I get out my Hulk Hogan pint glass mags ready there for me fizzy pop. Opened up the cream soda, the sort of 35p Happy Shopper cream soda stuff that I like from down the road in the off-license. Bloody thing exploded all over me, didn't it? So now I'm sat here, now, with my notebook, some of the words are merging into each other because they're covered. I'm sat in a nice purple Rockers t-shirt with an image of Shawn Michaels throwing Marty Jannetty through the glass in the barbershop window. It's a really cool t-shirt I got for Christmas. That's classic. Soaked through to the skin in cream soda. My jogging bottoms that my daughter told me a week or two ago she wouldn't even wear them around the house. They are soaked in cream soda. So at the moment, I may smell absolutely fantastic, but in about 20 minutes or so, I think I'm going to be sticky and horrible and gross.
Wow.
So on what those two...
What an epic tale.
Well, on those two car crashes tale. There. Absolute car crashes there. How's your week been, mate? Any cream soda-related accidents?
Do you know, there's funnily enough, no, there's not been any cream soda. I mean, I have no tales of war that can even compete with that. So I think the best thing that's happened to me this week is my coffee beans are out for my new coffee machine. But yeah, apart from that, maple walnut flavoured coffee beans I've got.
I don't. My wife is mad into coffee. She loves it. Loads of different vanilla flavors, and she's got all the machines for this, that, the other. But I'm not a coffee drinker myself. I never have been, so I'm not 100% sure.
Maybe this weekend. I have no idea. It's just I've got a bean to cut machine. It's something I've wanted for a long while, and the family all chipped together to get me one for Christmas. So I'm making the best of it.
Nice. I prefer a nice cup of tea myself, mate.
I like Yorkshire tea. I don't mind Yorkshire tea.
Ah, that's what I drink as well. Look at that. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
There we go. We're more similar than we realise.
One of us has to do 270 degrees right to turn left.
Yeah, at the moment, mate, definitely, at the moment.
I would have loved to have seen you just rocking around that factory and just having to turn around pretty much a full circle to get to somewhere on your left-hand side. That would have been absolutely brilliant.
At the moment, the job is I work in an arts supplies place.
Okay.
Even though we're all going into a lockdown, apparently, because we sell online, I'm listed as an essential worker because when there's a global pandemic, apparently everyone still needs their fucking paintbrushes. I don't know. But we, so all I'm doing is literally packing art supplies. And it's okay when I'm doing the little stuff. And even the big stuff's not heavy. But trying to stretch my arms around some of these big canvases that these people want to paint at home is ridiculous. And I'm dropping stuff and people are looking at me like, what's wrong with this bloke? You know, it's thinking I'm just some kind of moron. And I can't turn around and be like,
what's that whiff of cream soda I can smell?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I smell fantastic right now. I really do. I'm going to patent this. I'm going to make some kind of cream soda cologne. This can't go wrong, mate. This is fantastic. This is going on the chain wrestling franchise.
Merch that, yes.
Yeah, along with the egg and cress. That. Along with the egg and cress sandwich van me and you were going to set up to build up for our retirement.
See, this is why you came up with the show, with ideas of how you can build a franchise.
An empire. A cream an soda, empire. An egg and cress sandwich empire. Oh, wow. Okay then, mate. So after all my, hopefully people find my, you know, discomfort entertaining, at least I suppose someone's got to get a giggle out of it, not just the wife. Should we move on to our fantastic topic that won the vote this week? Thank you to everybody who voted. We had a great response again on Twitter. It's hugely appreciated.
Absolutely is.
With 64% of the votes this week, the Okada versus Omega match, the second one of their four match series that happened at Dominion in 2017, Max. I rewatched it this afternoon. I know you said yourself you rewatched it as well. What were your initial thoughts, mate, going back to this? I suppose, even though it's not that old, I think we can refer to it as a classic, can't we?
Well, yeah. Any match that breaks the Dave Meltzer scale of star ratings, it's got to be at least up there with some of the best matches. I mean, I know a lot of people don't like Meltzer, but I've always been of the opinion if he gives a match a really good rating, it's something worth checking out, whether you agree with every single word he says about it or not. That's the subjectivity of wrestling. But when a match breaks the rating like the Okada and Kenny matches do, I think they're incredibly worth checking out. And this is one I've not actually gone back and watched as many times as some of the others, which is a shame really, because going back and actually watching it, you can just see how they took a match at Wrestle Kingdom, which was then slated as arguably the best match that there's ever been, and just one-upped it and just kind of did all the same similar things, but just made it slightly better and were just really kind of pushing to be the absolute best there. This feud is one of my favourite feuds ever. This this quadrology of matches between Okada and Omega. Yeah, I really enjoyed going back and revisiting this topic.
See, I'm going to say something now that's maybe a bit of a shocker. Well, it was a shocker for me finding it out. I don't think I've seen this before.
Wow.
I know. I got New Japan World to watch the Wrestle Kingdom match that involved Chris Jericho. And that kind of was my start with New Japan. Rather than the odd match here and there that people would flag up on online via YouTube or whatever. And I'd watch some bits and bobs on tapes that I get hold of when I was a kid without really knowing what I was watching, if you know what I mean. But sort of as a wrestling fan to the level I am now, I went back and watched the first one. I remember watching the third one and the fourth one, which is an absolute barnstormer, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I'm watching this one back, and I mean, I don't know if it's. I mean, Kenny Omega's hair is considerably different. The arena they're in didn't ring a bell. Cody with the towel. All these things I'm looking at, and I'm thinking, I don't remember this. So I'm not 100% sure if I've not seen this before, but just always assumed that I had because I'd seen the other three, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense.
So yeah, it was quite a surprise. And I'm fairly certain. I'm not, so that was quite a nice little pleasant surprise for me this afternoon.
Okay, so
it does also mean that you saying last week it goes to a 60-minute draw was a complete bloody spoiler for me about
I've absolutely ruined the match for you. So let's just give a little bit of context about how we arrived at this match. So the previous Wrestle Kingdom we'd seen Kenny take on Okada after winning the G1. Ultimately, Carter defeated him, and then what usually happens then is we go into tournaments like the New Japan Cup, which Kenny was shockingly beat in the first round of the New Japan Cup in 2017. I think it was won by Shibata, who then was beaten by Okada, and then we get to Dominion, which is kind of like New Japan's SummerSlam. So it's like the second biggest show that they do, and Okada actually challenged Kenny to a match. So basically he wanted to put over the fact that Omega was his strongest ever challenger, and that he wanted to kind of like just rubber stamp the fact that he was the best in New Japan, and wanted to beat Kenny to that. Going to a few of that interviews that was done after this match, Kenny's said he thought it was a little bit too soon to revisit. He wanted this to kind of like bubble and brew, but because of how big this was for New Japan in terms of business and how they were looking to expand into the West, and Kenny was and the Bullet Club were kind of front and centre of that, pushing him to back to a match with Okada made all the sense in the world, because they wanted to put butts in seats and basically just kind of like really keep this momentum that New Japan had going. So that's what led to Dominion 611, Osaka Joe Hall, Kenny versus Okada 2.
Yeah, and what a contest it was. 11,700 odd were in the building for us. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's really sort of stood out to me watching that today, Japanese crowds are very different anyway, aren't they, Max? They're kind of a bit more, I don't want to say subdued because they're into it as much as anyone else, but I suppose noise level and responses are different. It's a different culture, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Watching Wrestle Kingdom with a very minimal amount of fans this year, I didn't massively notice that the pandemic was affecting the show, if that makes sense, because I've not seen any New Japan for a while. But then comparing that to what I saw today, back in 2017, I did really notice a difference. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. And I think the thing with Japanese wrestling fans is kayfabe is still considered very much a real thing over in Japan. These wrestling is reported alongside traditional actual sports. When you see the backstage interviews and the backstage promos, they're always genuine sports reporters who are there to get the comments from the wrestlers. So it's really looked at as kind of like an actual competition rather than a scripted play fight. So, and then you look at the Japanese culture, and it's a very subdued culture anyway. There's if you'll notice when you watch live events on New Japan, there's usually like the promos before the event that shows like the kind of the rules of being in attendance, like where you're not allowed to reach out to touch the wrestlers, you're not allowed to like scream and shout, you will be ejected, you're not allowed to kind of upset your fellow fans. So it has always been a very kind of respectful culture, and that really does kind of permeate down into the wrestling fans.
I think some places around the world, and to be honest, some people on wrestling Twitter could learn a lot from that, couldn't they? Upset other wrestling fans.
But, absolutely.
Yeah. Something else you say there about the rules and so on appearing before the match and that. How cool is the little video they had showing the ex-IWGP champions all running through in date order?
Yeah.
Prior to the entrances. I love that. That's brilliant.
And I also really like the fact that they keep a number score of how many champions they've been. It's something that has really always fascinated me. When you see the schedules for New Japan, you'll always see for instance, Kota Ibushi, the current champion, is the 68th and 45th champion, and it's I thought that's a really good kind of link back to history. You don't really see that in WWE, at least, where they'll show that there's a lineage to this title, and you can really kind of go back and trace it back. And I think when he got to Okada, it showed him he was the 50th and then the 60th and so on and so on. I really like that kind of attention to detail that they give with New Japan.
Yeah, I mean, I love stuff. I mean, I'm a proper... Not saying I'm good at maths, I don't mean it in that way, but I am kind of a numbers geek, I guess, with regards to dates and title reigns and all that sort of thing. So I love that point of reference, I guess. And also, I think it adds prestige to what the guys are fighting for. If you've got no... If you're battling for a title, whether it's in New Japan, WWE, wherever, the whole point of you being in this company is that regardless of whether you're a tag guy or a mid-card guy or whatever, you should be looking to be the best, or you shouldn't be in the sport, for want of a better term. So making the title seem very prestigious, very sought after, very important, to me really sets the tone for the whole show, the whole company, and the whole promotion in general, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, and I totally agree with you, especially when you can put on your resume that you were among the 60 people in history who have been the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. It's something that you could be absolutely proud of. You compare that to, again, WWE. You don't know your place in the order. You don't know how many champions have come before you or how many champions are coming after you. You're just labelled as a WWE champion. I really think that the New Japan way really sticks out and makes you kind of stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so we get the entrances of the two competitors. Omega comes out to his old music that they had in New Japan, which I all thought was I enjoyed that. I always thought that was good as an entrance scene. It was very sort of, I don't know how to word it, very epic sounding. It made him seem important. Okada comes out, and he obviously couldn't make his mind up which of his big sparkly jackets to wear this evening, so he chucked on two. So we have Okada two coats there coming down to the ring. And the match gets underway, and I suppose you get the same, similar to the match we watched last week in the chain that led us to where we are now with Joe and Punk. You get the start there where they're kind of sort of trying to feel each other out a little bit, and then you get a quick burst of moves, a quick burst of speed, and it slows back down again a little bit. And it's almost setting the stall for knowing that we're going to go long, isn't it, Mags?
Yeah, I thought exactly that. When you watch the beginning of this and then you compare it to obviously the Wrestle Kingdom match that they had 5 months previously, one thing you notice straight away is the slow start, and and knowing the result after, beforehand, you can tell they kind of like settling in, knowing that they're going for a long haul, and still kind of revisiting the spots that they had in the first match. Because let's face it, if it isn't broken, don't fix it. You have destroyed the rating scale of one of the most renowned wrestling analysts in the world. Why would you not go back to that? Well, it absolutely would make sense, but they played it so well, knowing that they were adding an extra 10-15 minutes to the match to really take it slow. Then they also added a kind of a nuance for me where they knew what each other was thinking, and it was kind of almost like it would take that one little slip up for the person to be able to take advantage. And we kind of got that in the first few minutes where it was so kind of back and forward that Okada and Omega both knew what each other were wanting to do. Both were looking to finish really quickly and really kind of rubber stamp the fact that they were the best wrestler. But obviously, we know that wasn't going to be the case, and this was going to be an epic of all proportions.
Yeah, and we had a few little moments as well, kind of leaning into what the match was going to be as a story throughout the length of the contest. I mean, there was a great deal based around could Omega hit the one-winged angel.
Mm-hmm.
Don Callis on commentary. At the beginning, he almost came across quite Bobby Heenan at Royal Rumble 92-esque with the whole Ric Flair bias with regards to the bias towards Kenny Omega, and saying about New Japan being very corporate and Okada being their chosen corporate champion and everything's against Omega and so on. And he kept citing and shouting and yelling about if he hits that move, it's over and no one's kicked out of it. And he gets teased a few times and you can hear the crowd really reacting to the tease of this move. Like it's going to be the end no matter what. Quite early on as well, we see Okada tweak his knee from the dropkick attempt. And they keep going back to that as well. Omega keeps, you know, a few moves on this knee that maybe has took a knock through this dropkick attempt. And the commentators keep throwing back to it as well. I think it's very clever storytelling throughout this contest.
Yeah, absolutely. And to kind of throw props to one of my friends on Twitter, Ray Cash. One of the things he hates about wrestling is when you focus on a body part like that and then you forget about it. And all of a sudden you are able to use that body part as if nothing happened. In this match, that in going into the last 10-15 minutes, that definitely did happen. Okada definitely forgot that he'd had an injured knee. And even we got, like you said about the commentary, we got Don Callis basically shouting at Kenny to start working back on that knee, which kind of shows just the wrestling man that Don Callis has got. And look, now we're 4 years on and he's still linked with Kenny Omega, now arguably doing some of the best work in Western wrestling. It's just really good throwbacks to see, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Some of the, I suppose it's to be expected when you've got potentially the two best in the world at this stage in the ring together, putting off a match that is heralded as one of the best of all time, you're going to see some incredible moments. Let's be honest, that fits the bill. It's obvious. A few that stood out for me relatively early on, and well, maybe not even early on, going through the first half an hour. Okada hits a crossbody on the outside. He jumps over the guardrail to hit Omega with a crossbody, and it just looks incredible with Omega between the sort of two fences they have with New Japan.
Yeah, it's absolutely glorious. It's such a, like I said, they threw everything at each other. I like the snap-rana from Omega at the beginning, and then he's teasing for the Rise of the Terminator, the fans all get into it, and then Okada just comes in with a massive big boot and just proper floors Omega. I love the way that these two guys knew how to get you so invested that you was itching for a move to happen, and then they cut you off right at the end. Really, really good at kind of tugging at your emotional strings, I suppose.
Oh, definitely. Speaking of things that looked glorious, we had Kenny Omega hitting a moonsault from the top rope right to the outside. That was insane. And the fact that he jumped onto the top rope and almost lost his balance a little bit, I think, and sort of regained it.
I mean, Don Callis mentioned it on the commentary, saying Kenny at 220, 230 is able to do things that juniors weren't able to do. The way he was able to keep balance there and still pull off that move, absolutely glorious. It's the one of the best wrestlers in the world at his absolute peak.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Apologies if anyone can hear some background noise going on at the moment. I'm not sure if anything's being picked up here or not, but there's some absolute dick splat out the back letting off fireworks. Where I live is...
I can't hear it, so...
Great stuff. Where I live is... I don't like it. I hate it. But no doubt you're going to hear my dog and my cats going absolutely batshit crazy about these fireworks now. So just bear that in mind. If anyone can hear any noises in the background, I do apologise, but... It's the glorious people who live in this area, I'm afraid. Omega takes an absolutely horrid bump, I think, on the apron from a Death Valley driver, as they called it on commentary. It just looked so rigid, so stiff. It's literally a driver. He's driven into the mat, isn't he?
Yeah, it's... And this I think it was Kevin Kelly who said on the commentary about how you could see the wind being forced out of Kenny from that. And obviously we know commentary is there to provide hyperbole, but you genuinely could feel it. There was the slow motion replay. He just landed flat back on the edge of the apron. Oh my God, it was such a brutal move. These guys threw everything at each other. And then we got the table spot not long after that when the shot for me was when Okada had led Kenny on the table, and you could see that just behind Kenny, all the cameramen and the books kind of like blocking it, like they were almost watching a car accident where they were just rubbernecking, and they were just, everybody wanted to get a good view. Okada with that macho man style elbow, and those fucking Japanese tables, they must be made of marble. I don't think they would. I think they are sheets of marble, because that table, you could have still let your dinner off it afterwards. There was just no breaking it whatsoever. Just absolutely brutal.
Yeah, I mean, they look like real tables, don't they? It's not like
they WWE. They look like a door attached to a table frame.
Yeah. definitely. I mean, that's probably sturdier than my house, to be fair. Those tables. I want to see if I can get some, sort of knock them up against the walls and just, you know, reinforce this place a little bit, maybe. Omega... gets hit as well by I don't know what they call it. Is it a shotgun drop kick on the outside that sends him into the ring barrier again, the crowd barrier again, sorry. And again, that was incredibly brutal, and the noise is unbelievable. He also gets hit with a German suplex and basically gets his head driven straight into the mat, and it looks brutal and terrible, and it's just such hard-hitting stuff. And I know the old adage is, oh, it's supposed to, you know, it's predetermined, it's this, that, the other. But there's moments, for me, the best moments in wrestling is when you're watching as a fan. You can suspend your disbelief, and what you're watching sucks you in as being real. Or there are moments where you look at and go, okay, that must have hurt regardless of, you know, the situation. Yeah. And this match this match looked like a real fight.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely was. If there's plenty of shots when Okada, who for me is one of the best sellers in the world, the way he can subtly sell rather than have to go all out and go over the top. He's got a massive welt on his eyebrow from where he's taking proper shots. I mean, these guys were not holding back. Obviously, we as fans know that it's predetermined, but these guys were throwing everything at each other. I mean, the drop kicks when Okada landed them, and his drop kick in this match was absolutely superb. He used it perfectly to avoid V triggers and to avoid the one winged angel. You can see where he's putting that extra little bit of kind of stank in it to really force home that this is a battle. You can see like the extra kind of like the inches that he's pushing them for the kicks to connect, it's absolutely brutal. The chop and punch battles that they do with the forearm battles, Jesus Christ, my jaw was hurting watching this. Never mind a Carter and Omega's jaw.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, Mags, talk to me about the whole Cody Rhodes thing. Cody comes out with a Bullet Club at some stage during the match, sort of towards the end, I suppose. And he's looking like he's going to throw the towel in when Omega is looking slightly worse for wear, shall we say. You are far more knowledgeable about New Japan in any era than I. Explain to me what was going on there.
Right, so this, I mean, I don't know if you are a watcher of Being the Elite, but this was kind of the start of the fracturing of Bullet Club. Obviously, we know of the Elite, of Kenny and the Bucks, but Cody had been drafted into New Japan. He had this kind of attitude that he was a huge star, and he was brought into Bullet Club, and it was almost like he wanted to take over Bullet Club. Basically, wanted to be in charge of Bullet Club. He's very friendly with the Bucks. Him and Kenny were friendly at the beginning, but then you could see there was fracturing there. And at the time, Cody had tried to get the Tongans on side with Tama and Tangaloa and Bad Luck Farley. So we were getting to this kind of subtle heel turn of Cody, where we were going to get eventually Bullet Club versus Bullet Club. And this is when he came out. He wanted, obviously, to be the star of Bullet Club, so he came out with the towel, with the rest of the Bullet Club, with the Tongans. And it was really subtly how he was showing that he was the heel, even though he was coming out to defend Kenny, to stop Kenny taking the punishment. So it was basically just to build for that kind of storyline to come off.
Ah, okay. That makes a lot of sense, because you end up eventually with Omega, Cody, and I can't remember the third person in a triple threat at some stage. That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember now, yeah. I mean, again, like I said, I missed this show, and I don't watch Being the Elite, so I can understand they were sort of heading towards some issues in Bullet Club, but the exact details I wasn't sure of.
Yeah. So if you go back again when you next watch this match and you see the Bucks stopping Cody from throwing the towel in, and then that's Kenny starting to make his comeback, and then all the Bullet Club kind of surround the ring and they're doing the Terminator slaps on the apron. There's only Cody who's not doing it. And even though he's kind of supporting Kenny with the shouting along with the rest of Bullet Club, he's never there applauding. He's never there cheering along with him. He's the one who's always kind of watching the clock. I think when he gets to the last 5 minutes, he's the one who tells everybody, oh, it's 5 minutes to go, because he essentially wants Kenny to lose, because he wants to be the head of Bullet Club. And even after this match, he's the one who then goes on to challenge Okada in the G1 special in the US. And his words were, you've never faced a real superstar. So really kind of like backhand slapping his leader in Kenny Omega with those kind of comments.
Yeah, little subtleties as well, isn't it? That, like you said, not joining in with the Terminator slaps and so on. It's quite clever, isn't it? Long-term subtleties thrown in here and there to tell the story. It's brilliant stuff. Eventually, Omega hits the one-winged angel, but Okada gets to the ropes, so I suppose it carries on the tale of no one's kicked out of this move, and he barely gets to the ropes, doesn't he? He's all really
literally that 2.999. That was so close. I mean, I don't even think he actually made contact with the rope. He's just, his foot was beyond the rope, because he like leaned it through the ropes, and his toes basically saved that match. And yeah, the one winged angel was so well protected. I mean, compare that to Okada, who was then the champion. He hits, I think, 4, maybe 5 Rainmakers in this match. So that's a move that clearly can't keep anybody down, because he has to hit it so many times. But the One Winged Angel, it gets hit once, and it's the closest we get to a pin in the whole of the match.
Now, I don't want to dang talk Mr. Okada in the slightest. However, this Rainmaker move, yes, it looks great. Yes, it's quite stiff and hard-hitting. And yes, it's built up big time by the commentators and so on. And the crowd react to it as well, as much as they can in Japan, I guess. But let's be honest, it's a short-arm clothesline. Jake Roberts was doing this in the mid-80s, wasn't he? Jake Roberts was holding onto somebody's wrist and giving them a short-arm clothesline like this in the 80s. It's not a one-winged angel. It's not a crossroads. It's not something unique, is it? Let's be fair, you know?
I understand. I think it's the when he grabs the waist and he puts the spin in it, that's the little added factor, I suppose.
Sort of ripcord sort of efforts, like with the old
war pose. I suppose.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Maybe that's why recently he's changed to the money clip, because he knows that he may have been watching some Bradshaw matches and thought, you know what, he does a better clothesline than me, I'll switch to the money clip.
Yeah, or perhaps going back and looking at Jake Roberts, and you know, he's got his WWE Network subscription, I imagine, Mr. Okada, sat in his place in Japan, watching back this Tuesday in Texas or something like that, and he sees Jake Roberts throw that short-arm clothesline, and he goes, you know what, if Jake the Snake can't win a match with it, what the bloody hell am I thinking? I'm going to change what I'm doing, man. You know, because he's an intelligent fella. He's probably seen this and just thought, I'm going to change up what I'm doing, and rightfully so. Because that money clip's a good move, isn't it?
No, I don't like it.
Really?
No.
I went really squeaky then, didn't I? Did you hear that?
I shocked you. Absolutely shocked you. I think I like Red Ink when he does the Red Ink kind of like STO variant. I like that as a submission move, but yeah, the money clip, it's all right. I don't like him finishing with it. I want to see a Rainmaker
short arm clothesline. More moves, I guess, that looked ridiculous and vicious and dangerous. We had plenty of V triggers. We had a spinning or twisting tombstone. And of course, those Snapdragon suplexes that Omega throws. Oh my word! They look so vicious, so aggressive. It's just brilliant stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the speed that he hits them with. It was just they're absolutely brutal. And another thing I've really got to heap praise on with New Japan is they are so good at finding perfect camera angles. I don't know if you'll be aware, but there was a match a couple of years ago maybe between Will Ospreay and Ibushi, and then the camera work there was when Will Ospreay kind of did a flip and landed on his feet and Ibushi was stood there behind him. Well, this one they had a Okada was in the corner, and we got Kenny coming from the opposite corner, flying across the ring to hit a V-trigger, but the camera was in just the perfect position for it to look absolutely disgustingly brutal, like he'd pounded a Carter's head clean into the post. It was brutal and great camera work.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose that kind of takes us to our finish, Mags, doesn't it? Or I suppose, in a way, non-finish, I guess. Okada hits his Rainmaker. Omega's out here, isn't he? He's done. He's flat on his back, completely out. He's done. Okada's dragging himself after an hour of this hard-hitting action to attempt to make the cover as the clock runs down. Can't quite get there in time. The bell rings when it looks like he could have potentially, if he made the cover, actually won the match, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And the kind of the big moment in this, or the highlight, is when Okada goes for that one final Rainmaker that will finish the match, and Kenny collapses under his own steam. But it's such a subtle and such a simple way of avoiding a Rainmaker, but it's the perfect timing. that Kenny is dropping just as the Rainmaker just glides above his head. Such great storytelling. Kenny is absolutely down on the floor, worn out. Okada slams into the corner because obviously he was hoping to hit it, and his kind of momentum took him into the corner. And then we get that slow build then to the end where both guys have really give all that they can, but they want that one last boost of adrenaline to just kind of get this match over the line. We get Okada hitting that bridge in German. We get Omega going for a small package. To get out of that, Okada hits the drop kick. They struggle to get to the feet. Omega grabs the ropes to stop getting hit with the Rainmaker. We get that Snapdragon drop kick again, which again I thought was one of Okada's best weapons in this match, was the drop kick. It really saved him so many times. And then we get that one final Rainmaker, absolutely brutalizes Kenny. Both guys go down. Okada goes for the cover, and time runs out, perfectly timed, just like the Punk and Samoa Joe, where the timing was so well done that we just couldn't get that definitive winner.
Yeah, without a doubt. I really, really enjoyed watching this back. Well, maybe not watching it back, maybe for the first time. Either way, I really enjoyed watching this today. So first of all, it was a brilliant suggestion by yourself, and it's awesome that the people listening voted for this to win. As always, Mags, well, maybe not as always because I forgot the one time, but most of the time we try to rate what we see out of 10. I imagine in the same way the last couple of matches have been, this is going to be quite high. I'll let you go first, sir. Where would you like to place this out of 10 on our rating scale?
Okay, so I've made it clear that I think that Okada versus Omega 4 is the closest to perfect that I've seen in my time as a wrestling fan. So that doesn't quite reach these heights for me. So I don't feel comfortable giving it a 10, knowing that I don't want to be a Dave Meltzer and have to give a match 11 out of 10. So I also think that this is maybe the best match we've watched so far. So we've given quite a few nines. So I'm going to have to go on 9.5.
9.5,
I'm going to have to give it 9.5.
Yeah, okay. That makes a lot of sense the way you explain that. I'm probably going to go a touch less than yourself. I think that, like you said, we've seen some great matches already. It's not as good as Omega Okada 4, as you said. That's, I know you've said in the past, that's one of your favourite matches of all time. I absolutely love that contest too. It's not quite as good as that, so to me, I can't give it 4 marks. I did enjoy this more than Joe versus Punk last week, though, and that was an 8 for me. So I think a 9 for me is pretty accurate. I enjoyed watching this as much as I enjoyed watching Cena Punk for different reasons. But yeah, I think a 9 for me, and as you said, a 9.5 for yourself. I mean, that's fair enough.
I think that's the first time we've really been slightly different on our ratings.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Yeah, definitely. I think it could have been potentially the full 10 if they'd held this match inside a steel cage with a straitjacket. I think that may have added that last.
Wow. It absolutely could have.
But to be fair, neither Okada or Omega have the arms of Big Papa Pump to be able to rip that reinforced cloth, so maybe it wouldn't have worked as well. Who knows? On Twitter this week, we had a few interactions here and there, but there's only really one that I want to jump to this week, and that is from our good friend Scott Robertson, who has messaged the show pretty much every week since we started. Big supporter of the Chain Wrestling Podcast. Really thankful for that, Scott. Hugely appreciated. He puts in something that I think I'm going to leave you to discuss and you to run through, Mags, because you're far more knowledgeable about this topic than I. He has just simply asked, the four matches Omega and Okada had, rank them in order of greatness.
Oh, Scott, you absolute evil. Right, so going bottom to top for me, I would go with Okada versus Omega from the G1 when Kenny got his, I think that was his first win. Not because it's a bad match by any stretch of the imagination. That's what kind of led to Kenny being able to challenge for that title again. But it was the shortest match. I think it was only about 25 minutes long. Still got 6 stars, so it's absolutely one of the best matches you will ever see. And it's weird ranking these four matches and saying there's a worse one. It's absolutely, it baffles me. Then I would go with the one we've just watched now. It was another stunning match, and I'm really glad that it won the pick, and arguably it's higher rated than the original. But that, I think that original one was the bar setter for me. It showed what these two guys could do. So that one sneaks in at number two, the one from Wrestle Kingdom 2017. That would be the second one. And then number one, I'll make no bones about it, it's the 7-star match for a reason. It's what made Kenny call himself the best bout machine. It's Okada versus Omega 4 for me, the one where Kenny finally wins that IWGP World Heavyweight title, and the best 2 out of 3 falls match, where both Kenny and Okada said, we don't want a time limit on this because we need a definitive winner. I think going into that fourth match, the record was 1-1-1 for wins, losses and draws. So we finally got the Kenny really kind of vanquishing that four of Okada. So I'd rank it the third match, then the first match. No, third match, then the second match, then the first match, then the fourth match.
Okay, so what's that? 3, 2, 1, 4? Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, there we go. Thank you again, Scott, for that. And I want to say very quickly, thank you to everyone who tweets the show, votes in the polls. It makes it so much more fun and interesting for me and Mags whilst we're doing this. Obviously, you can get hold of the show on Twitter at @chain_wrestling. I always do try and put out what's won the poll in advance of me and Mag's recording, so people can get questions and thoughts in and can make suggestions as to where we can possibly go from the winner of that for the next show. And me and Mags have used suggestions off Twitter from you fellas and ladies for the next episode ourselves already. So, yeah, keep it up. It's brilliant. The interaction is great. The feedback is great. The more we get, the easier it is for me and Mags to shape the show as to what people want to hear. So I know I'm very appreciative of all that, and I know you are as well, Mags, yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay, speaking of suggestions, links, and so on, we'll look at where we're heading next week, I guess, mate. Shall I go first?
Yeah, let's see where you take us.
Okay. Being in New Japan really sort of got me thinking about how I can use New Japan, the events they have, or even potentially Kenny Omega being Canadian and the whole Winnipeg links with Jericho. And there's plenty of options there, I think. But especially with regards to New Japan and the people who have worked there and the quality of matches they have and the unique tournaments they have. There's so many tournaments in New Japan, isn't there? Kenny to get the initial shot at Wrestle Kingdom, because obviously this is the rematch, isn't it, from the Wrestle Kingdom contest between he and Okada. Kenny to get the match at Wrestle Kingdom, initially he had to win the G1 to earn that title shot, didn't he, Max? Yep.
Correct.
Okay. Now the G1 has been running for many years now, has it? 20 odd years, I think it is. So many great competitors, so many great memories, so many great winners of the G1, and it goes way, way, way back. But before the G1, before it was named the G1, they had a tournament called the IWGP tournament, and it was like the precursor for the G1. And it was very much the same principle, the sort of round robin league system with points and so on. So I'd like to use that to link back to effectively 1983. and we're going to look at the winner of the very first IWGP tournament. Again, the precursor to the G1. And that winner headlined WrestleMania 7 in 1991. And that was Hulk Hogan. So we could potentially go back and watch Hulk Hogan save the world.
These links get more and more convoluted every single time that you do. It's absolutely brilliant.
But we're not gonna. I'm gonna save that for Christmas or something, maybe as a special treat for us, Max. Very quickly, the real link I'm going with is these two at this stage, like me and Max discussed earlier on, we're in my opinion, and I think the opinion of many other people, the best two in the world at this point. And obviously they went an hour and drew here. It may be a bit of a stretch, but it's something I'm really curious about. In 1996, Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, in my opinion, were the two of the best in the world in ring. And they went a whole hour and drew, even though there was overtime at WrestleMania 12, the Iron Man match. Now, I want to go back and have a little look at that with you, Mags, and with the listeners and the feedback on Twitter, because the main reason being, maybe not to look back on this match with fond memories, but because it is so divisive. It is so... Some people talk about it being an absolute clinic, being an absolute classic, and then some people say it's boring as hell. And I don't think, as big a Bret Hart fan as I am, and as big a Shawn Michaels fan as I am, I don't think I've watched this match back in a long, long time. So I'm really curious as to hear people's feedback on the social media accounts we have for Chain Wrestling, my own thoughts when I go back and watch it for the first time in a long time, and then obviously your thoughts as to whether this is an excellent 60-minute exhibition of brilliant wrestling with drama at the end, with the overtime and so on, or is it just a contest between two big egos that sucks balls and is boring as hell? So my link via the hour-long draw that happened, and the two competitors potentially being the best in the world at that time, is to go back to WrestleMania 12 and watch the Iron Man contest between WWF champion Bret the Hitman Hart and his challenger, Royal Rumble winner, Shawn Michaels.
Interesting. It's a great pick. It'd be fun dissecting what is arguably especially comparing it against what two matches that have been labelled as some of the very best Broadways, and one, like you said, that has been so divisive among wrestling fans.
Yeah, it's kind of where my mindset went after watching this hour long today. I thought, everyone praises this hour of competition as being superb, but you go back X amount of years, you've got this other contest where some people absolutely love it, and other people say it's a big pile of steaming dog dirt. So it's like, I'm interested to see what people's thoughts. I'm interested to see what your thoughts are. But what are you going to put up against it, my friend? What's going to potentially knock this down this week?
So I've got a few pathways I'm interested in going down, and I especially want to kind of use the fact that you've got New Japan World for the month of January, and thought we might as well put it to some good use.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at perhaps if we look at this match was the headliner of Dominion 611. I want to go back to when Kenny made his Dominion debut as a singles wrestler. He'd been in some of the multi-mans beforehand, but his actual debut as a singles wrestler was when he was still in the junior heavyweights division, and he was actually went into Dominion 2015 as the junior heavyweight champion, and he faced what would arguably be called the former ace of the junior division for New Japan, Kushida. But then I also thought, why not take that link and then use Kushida, who is widely regarded as one of the best ever junior heavyweight wrestlers in history. And I had a quick look at his kind of stats as it comes to renowned matches. And he's only actually got one 5-star match in his whole career. And that was against Will Ospreay. In the Best of the Super Juniors final for 2017. So I'm tempted to go with that, because obviously any match. I mean, what you think about Will Ospreay as a person, or his kind of his attitude, the guy knows how to put on good matches. And that'll link into something I actually want to bring up after I've told you my pick. But I'm not going to go with them. I'm going to go with Kenny's first ever five-star match. The match that really kind of put him front and centre as arguably the best bout machine, about the match of the year factor. I'm going to go with, from Night 18 of the G1 of 2016, Kenny Omega taking on Tetsuya Naito, where he wins his block for the 2016 G1, and then he would ultimately win the G1 and lead into that match at Wrestle Kingdom that started this quadrology of amazing matches with Kazuchi Okada. So I would like to go to August the 13th, 2016, New Japan G1 Climax, Night 18, Kenny versus Naito.
I'm a huge Naito fan. I love this guy. He's fantastic. I suppose, again, I talk about my family quite a bit on the shows that we do. My daughter is a massive Naito fan as well. And again, it's testament to how good the match was that we've watched today, that it went, well, not maybe this particular match, but the matches they've had, Okada and Omega, going as long as they have. My daughter, who at the time was a few years younger than she is now, she's 11 now, so however old she was back then, 7 or 8 potentially, my maths isn't very good, apologies, but she would sit through and watch the whole hour-long matches from New Japan, captivated. And she wouldn't do that for any other company. So again, it just shows, I suppose, the quality of wrestling New Japan has. Sorry, that was a little bit of a sidetrack there, but Naito, I'm a big fan of. Omega, obviously, I love. The G1 is a brilliant tournament. The wrestling in the wrestling in New Japan is fantastic. If anyone's listening to this show and they've not given New Japan a try, they've not spent the money to get the New Japan World app, I suppose, or service, streaming service they have, it's well worth it. It's 999 yen, which works out, what, Max, about 6-7 quid, is it, something like that?
I think it's about £7.20.
It's well worth it. If you're actually into the in-ring quality, is unbelievable. It's really worth it. And ultimately, if you pay for the service and you don't like it, you've lost 6-7 quid. What's that?
Yeah.
£2 a week or whatever?
Yeah.
But it's well worth it.
And whilst it's not as kind of in-depth and intuitive as the WWE Network, you can certainly go back and watch a lot of the wrestlers who you know, the likes of Chris Jericho, the likes of Finn Balor, the Bucks. You can go back and just binge all those matches for the sake of 7 quid for a month. And then
go back and watch Hulk Hogan, Max.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Go back and watch Brock Lesnar as RWGP Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah, exactly. It's well worth a look. And that, Mags, is an absolutely fantastic pick. Omega versus Naito. Night 18 of the G1 2016. So there we go. Those are the options for the next link in the chain. As always, you decide where we go. You have the Iron Man contest between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart at WrestleMania 12. Or you have Kenny Omega versus Tetsuya Naito at the G1 in 2016, Night 18. One absolute barnstormer of a match, and one that maybe splits opinions. Could be an interesting discussion either way. Thank you very, very much for the interaction we've had. I hope to have more this week, and plenty of votes coming in deciding where we head next. Mags, tell everyone where we can find you, please, mate.
Okay, well, just before we go, I did a little you said earlier that you were a kind of like a sucker for numbers and dates and stuff like that. Yeah. I did a little bit of maths myself. I wanted to know whether because coming out of this match, Kenny was known as the best bout machine. He was known as the match of the year factory. I wanted to kind of like work out whether he was actually the what he says is whether he's the best bout machine. So I went and got a list of the wrestlers with the most 5-star rated matches.
Is it Hulk Hogan?
Hulk Hogan was definitely not. I've just got the top 10. So he definitely did not make that top 10. So I'm just going to run down the actual top 10 now. So joint 7, so there's 4 people in 7th place. You've got Minami Toyota, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kota Ibushi, and Will Ospreay with 13 5 stars each. Then in 6, you've got Akira Taue with 15. Kenny is in 5th with 17. Joint 3rd is Toshiaki Kawada and Kazuchika Okada with 21 each. Then 2nd is Kenta Kobashi with 23. And number 1 is Mitsuhara Misawa with 25. Now, that straight away would say that Kenny isn't the best bout machine because he's only 5th. But I don't think that tells the true story because these people have wrestled totally different numbers of matches. So what I wanted to do is get a percentage to see how many matches they'd wrestled and how many of those matches were 5-star matches. This shows how much of a nerd I am.
No, go on. I'm enjoying this. I imagine by now everyone else has pressed stop on the podcast. But go on.
Skip right to the end. So, revising that top 10, we've actually now got in 10th, we've got Minami Toyota. She had 13 5-star matches out of 2,700 actual matches for a percentage of 0.48. Then we've got 2 in joint 9th. It's Tanahashi and Akira Taue. Tanahashi had 13 matches. 5-star and above out of 2,381 currently for 0.54, and Taue had 15 out of 2,766 for 0.54. Then we get Kawada in 7th. He had 21 5-star matches out of 2,898, which is a 0.72%. Then the leader for actual 5-star matches is Misawa. He comes in at 6th with his 25 5-star rated matches, going up against 3,418, which leaves him at 0.73. So going into the top 5, the last of the retired wrestlers is Kenta Kobashi. He had his 23 5-star matches out of 2,391 for a 0.96 percentage. So the final 4 are all still currently active, which obviously can kind of skew the results a little bit. But we've got Ibushi in 4th, who had 5-star matches, and he's only wrestled 1,169 matches in his career, so his percentage is 1.11. Then in 3rd place, and this is actually the big shocker, it's that the best bout machine, Kenny Omega, comes in 3rd.
Oh, okay.
So his 17 5-star matches come in 1,176 matches total for a 1.44 percentage. So now we've got Will Ospreay and Okada. Okada has got 8 more matches as 5-star than Will Ospreay has, but he actually comes in 2nd place because he's wrestled 1,409 times, which gives him a percentage of 1.49%. Okada, Ospreay has got 13 5-star matches, but he's only ever wrestled 789 matches, which makes his percentage 1.64. So, love him or hate him, think he's a wet wipe or a douchebag, the guy is arguably the best bout machine, and it's the assassin Will Ospreay.
Why? I mean, first of all, fantastic homework and research there. That was amazing. But yeah, why? That's really interesting that Ospreay comes out on top like that. That's incredible. I mean, like you said, I enjoy watching the guy's work, but he is a dick.
Yeah, well, he's a massive douchebag. What he's done in his career is, yeah, he's been an arsehole. But the amazing thing is he's still so young in his career.
Yeah.
This guy could easily still surpass everybody by a long, long way. I mean, he's got 13 five-star matches now. Going into the heavyweight division in New Japan, it's very likely he's going to get way more than that. And his numbers are just going to keep growing and growing and growing. So we may see Will Ospreay arguably the best wrestler of all time.
Why? That's insane. Why?
Sorry, Conrad. I know you'll be listening, and I know you can't stand Will Ospreay, but the numbers prove it. They
don't
lie. Numbers
don't lie.
Yeah, and it spells disaster for him at Sacrifice.
That's it. No, that's amazing. Will Ospreay. Okay, fair play. Okay. Ah, great stuff. Well, on that note, then, slightly depressing, seeing as Ospreay's been in there. Well. Max, do I let everyone know whereabouts they can find you on social media, my friend?
Absolutely. You can follow me at Real Will Ospreay, where I'm the the best wrestler in the world. No, you can follow me at DJ Kirkby. I've got far too many podcasts to mention, so go over there and follow me on Twitter. That's the only social media you'll find me on. And come and check out my content there.
Excellent stuff. Very quickly as well, a message from my good lady. She was very disappointed last week when I randomly tried to link where we were back to Hogan at WrestleMania 7. knowing how much you hate that and you've seen it and it's boring and awful, when I did link it back to Hogan on that occasion, you didn't give your standard get to fork response.
I haven't done it this time, so just for Simon's missus, Simon, get to fuck.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. The only person realistically allowed to disappoint my wife is me, Mags. So
I'll try not to do it again. We'll just do a soundbite of literally just that, and you can just edit it in every 5 minutes or so, just me just saying get to fuck. Yeah.
Okay, brilliant stuff. I am at SJP Words, and you can follow the show and vote in our poll at Chain_Wrestling. You can find us also on Facebook, but as always, the poll is always going to remain on Twitter. Please chuck us a follow, vote in the poll, send us your feedback on the show, feedback on the matches we're watching, watch along with us, and follow the chain along. I'm off now to Google how to make cream soda into a cologne. Mags, I'll speak to you next week.
See you later.
Thank you very much. Bye bye. Mate, honestly, I'm fucking soaked. Let me see if I can show you. Hang on. See,
yeah, you absolutely look drenched. That looks like a black shirt.
T-shirt, man. Fucking look
like
it.
A you black know? T-shirt.
Fucking, it's absolutely stinking. I mean, jogging bottoms are.
You could have just got changed, I suppose. You could have just changed your shirt before recording. You'd have to suffer hypothermia.